If you want to connect with somebody and you want to send them a random message, like at least be curious about them. At least like do your research about them. At least like ask something that's going to start a conversation rather than just like going into, oh, I'm selling this thing, or oh, I'm running this promo, or oh, you should do this. Or I get so many messages on Instagram of people who are like, oh, I'd love to be a guest on your podcast. Uh-huh. What are you going to talk about? Like, what are you going to offer my audience? Like, tell me at like, give me some sort of like, you know, sell it to me a little bit if you want to be a guest on my podcast.
This is the Angles of Latitude podcast, session number 131 with the host of the How We Hustle podcast, Tanya Connor Green.
What you're about to hear is the integration of life.
Clarity is power.
If you live each day as if it was your last, someday you'll most certainly be right.
Liberty.
We choose to go to the moon.
It's happening.
And all things geek.
Yeah, I'm not sure I know how to answer that. You
got a badass over here.
Welcome to the Angles of Latitude podcast.
Hey girls and guys, welcome back to the show. I'm your host, JC Preston, and thank you so much for joining in again today. If this is the first time that you're listening in, this is a show where we bring you life lessons or a message from successful entrepreneurs, experts, and artists to help you find and execute your own personal mission and live a lifestyle that you're proud of. Before we get started today, I just want to say that yes, this is coming out on a Monday as opposed to a Thursday. A little bit later, obviously, than I would want, and really, because I don't know if you can tell in my voice, but it's a little lower than usual. Had a crazy allergy issue last week and was able to do like hardly any work. Voice was gone, couldn't stop coughing, and it was just bad news all around. And because of that, I hardly got any sleep, felt like crap all week, and ended up having to move a few interviews around that I was actually looking forward to getting done, but you know, crap happens. But hey, got through it all and ready to get into things this week. And this includes releasing this particular session. Now, this session, I have to say, was probably one of the most diverse conversations that I've had in a while. And as you'll hear, we jumped all over the place. So get strapped in as you hear this session's guest, because Tanya and I discuss all kinds of topics surrounding being a thought leader, being a coach, being a podcaster, just all those different things and the life that goes into it. So some of the things that we actually discussed today is how she actually got into high-level coaching, how she thinks we as thought leaders can connect better, and what's the one thing we need to keep in mind as we're making ad campaigns on social media. Before we get into that, just want to remind you guys of ClickFunnels. One of the things that we talk about today is creating, again, sales funnels. And, you know, part of the sales funnel is having a page called a landing page where you gather the information from leads. And today there's a lot of choices of creating a landing page. You can create one on your already existing website, or as you're hearing the conversation today, you might just opt in for third-party services to host it. And one of the biggest landing page providers is ClickFunnels. And a few years back, the founder of the company, Russell Brunson, wrote a book called .com Secrets, and it's one of the best resources that I've seen on the topic of creating sales funnels. And in fact, I know several people who refer to it each time as a checklist of things they need to include when creating a sales funnel for themselves or their clients. If you want access to this particular knowledge, you can actually get it for free. All you have to do is just visit newinceptions.com/.com secrets. Again, that's newinceptions.com/.com secrets. All right, so don't forget to subscribe to the show on CastBox, iTunes, or wherever you listen to your podcasts from. If you are listening on iTunes, would love to have a review and a comment so we can help get the future sessions out to more people in the future. And as usual, show notes and show note extras of this conversation can be found at newinceptions.com/131. And I'll be on after the show to fill you in on anything we might have missed. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the show. JC Preston here. And today, I'm super excited that you could join me. As you guys know, New Inception is all about empowering people to find and live out their personal mission. And a lot of the time, you know, this incorporates starting a business, which you start because your day-to-day activities really aren't fulfilling. And in fact, in 2017, it was reported that 85% of people aren't satisfied with their jobs. Today's guest knows what it feels like as a former corporate prisoner. She is keenly aware of how important it is for entrepreneurs to succeed in their business and regress back into the 9-to-5 life. Specifically, she helps women move beyond the fears of self-doubts that keep them hidden behind their computer screen so that they can stand out in the online crowd in order to make a larger impact with their business. Today, we're joined by Tanya Connor Green, and she can be found at wholeheartedbusinesscoach.com. Appreciate you having you on the show, Tanya. How you doing?
Thank you. I'm excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
So yeah, I mean, a lot of cool stuff that we can get into today. And one of the things that I noticed in your bio is that you actually have a nickname of the Little Pitbull. Where did that come from?
Well, I am short and small and a woman. And so when I was working in insurance, I had to negotiate like $100 million companies with their insurance. So, you know, it wasn't small numbers we were talking about. And I think because I was young and small and a woman, people underestimated me when it came to negotiating. So I tended to be a harder negotiator than some of the other people you might come across in commercial insurance. And so they used to call me the Little Pitbull.
Wow. Wow. So how did you get into commercial insurance out of all things? I mean, that's just kind of, you know, not something that you would consider doing when you're going through college or, you know, growing up. I mean, how did you even get to that?
Mm-hmm. So my family was in insurance and I always said that I would never do insurance. But then when I was in university and I had to get a summer job, I started working at an insurance company and I won't name which one it was, but I remember saying to my dad, I was 19 at the time. And I remember saying to my dad, I can't believe this is what you do. Like they pay me to go to nice restaurants and drink. Like this is a dream job.
All right.
And I couldn't believe that people got paid to basically like have fun with other people or schmooze people, as I like to say. And it was all about relationship building was the key underlying thing there that we were supposed to be doing. And I mean, it does work, but I think that when you get older, not 19, it doesn't seem so exciting to drink at lunch or go out all the time to eat. It gets exhausting and to be on all the time, even when you're not supposed to be working, like using your free time for that.
Right.
So as much as I thought it was a dream job at the beginning, it didn't really tickle my fancy as I got older.
Okay. Gotcha. Gotcha. So, you know, that must have been really hard to actually leave your comfort zone at that point. I mean, it's something that, again, your parents, you know, he had grown up with, and the fact that, again, people would consider it a dream job. I mean, not everybody grows up really, you know, in their professional life. And some people are, you know, would be fine doing that, you know, the rest of their career. How were you actually first inspired to start thinking about doing your own business? Because again, I mean, was there anybody in your family outside of your parents that might have sparked that initial interest, or where'd that come from?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. No one has ever asked me that on a podcast, so I'm excited to share that answer. So my parents were all in insurance, and my family, like in England, they are entrepreneurs, but I mean, I wasn't really keenly aware about that and they weren't in my regular life. So I thought that I was the first one. Mm-hmm. But when I was teaching snowboarding, I used to teach snowboarding to kids for like 11 years. I met this guy who also was teaching with me and we just built a friendship. And I had just really left school. Like it was my first year working a full-time job. And he would call me in the middle of the day on like a nice, beautiful day and say, hey, do you want to go snowboarding today? It looks like there's going to be powder up there. And I would be like, what is he talking about? I get 10 days of vacation. Like, what do you do? Like, don't you have a job? Like, how can you just like take the day off? Like, I don't understand that. Mm-hmm. And he's like, well, I work for myself. And I was like, huh? Like, I don't even know what do you mean? What do you do? And then he ran an online business. So that was my first exposure to that. I'd never even heard of that stuff. I didn't know you could do anything like that. I never ever thought that I would be doing something like that. And hanging out with him, I had so many questions. I am definitely a person that asks so many questions. I'm like, huh? Like, I don't get this. I've never even met a person that does this. And so I would ask and ask and ask. And for 5 years, I would ask him questions. And he would give me books to read. And I kept saying, oh, I would love to do this, but like, I have no ideas. I would love to do this, but like, I don't know how. I don't know what to do. I don't know what I would do. And he always used to give me the most annoying answer, which was, keep thinking. And I'd be like, that is no help at all. And for 5 years, we went back and forth with that. And it just, well, I feel like a lot of people's businesses are out of like pain or pleasure. Mm-hmm. And so the beginning, mine was certainly out of pain, where I like went through a really bad breakup. And I think I was reevaluating my life. I call it a quarter life crisis because I think I was 25 or 26. So I was like, this is my quarter life crisis. And I would be like, oh, like, what am I doing with my life? I work my butt off to make a bunch of rich people richer.
Mm-hmm.
Am I really making a difference in the world? Is this how I'm going to spend my entire life? Because when you're that age, you look at people that are older than you and think, or maybe I thought that I'm like, do I want the life that they have? Is that going to be like fulfilling for me for my whole life? Yeah. And there were just so many things I wanted to do. And I don't know, I felt like what I was doing was not what I was meant to be doing anymore, but I didn't know what else I could do. Cause like, that's all I knew at that point. So I remember like my best friend sending me this TED talk. I'm like, I don't have time for a TED talk right now. Like I'm like having a meltdown. Like who wants to watch a TED talk when you're like crying about a breakup and reevaluating your life? And it just so happened that it was Brené Brown's TED talk, The Power of Vulnerability.
Oh, yeah.
It's a good one. I'm pretty sure that the last time I checked, it was like the fourth most watched TED talk of all time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if you haven't watched that TED talk, highly recommend it.
Yeah, it'll be in the show notes.
Okay, great. And I was like blown away. At the time when I was working in insurance, I would have described myself as someone who had no feelings. I'm like, I don't have any feelings. Like, no, like, you know, I feel like I was like numb or I don't know, closed off from feeling those feelings. Cause like in business, you're taught, you know, there's no room for emotion in business. Like, especially as a woman, I guess they remind you about that all the time. Like, don't be a crying emotional woman in the office. And so I think that like that had been shut down and shut off for a really long time. And that just like opened me up to a whole world where I was also like going to therapy at the time. And like, I was reading Brené Brown's book, The Gifts of Imperfection. And it was opening my mind to, wow, like I had no idea that like you can change your reality just by thinking about it. Like that the things that we're like not saying are the things that are actually going to make us feel more connected to each other. And just it was like, I think it was just mind blowing for me that I'd never really thought about that. I'd never heard about stuff like this. And so I just wanted to know more. And I remembered that a friend of mine 6 months earlier, this is like where you're like, these conversations you think mean nothing. And then months or years later, they meant something. One of my friends called me after she'd met a coach and she's like, oh my gosh, I think you'd be great at this. Like, I think that this was you. And I was like, I looked into it for like maybe 30 seconds and was like, oh no, that's like way too expensive. Like if I went to that school, like, I don't know. Like, I don't know anything about coaching. Mm-hmm. And I remembered that she had said that. And I was like, maybe I should look a little bit more into this. And I did. And there just happened to be like a professional coaching school literally across the street from where I was living, where you could go in person. Cause I wasn't a part of the online world back then. Right. So I didn't know that you could like learn all these things online. I was like, oh no, if I'm going to learn this, like I want like to be with real people, not like doing it like remotely, you know, by myself. Right. And I mean, again, like I went in there, they said, if you take this course and you hate it, we'll give you your money back. And I was like, oh, no risk. Why not?
Best kind.
Might as well do it.
Yeah.
Right. Just got to try it. I, after obviously I didn't want my money back. And after I said to them, how many people in the 40 years that you guys have been doing this, how many people have you given their money back to? They said, less than five. Oh, okay. Probably should have asked that question before, but I'm glad I didn't. So, I mean, and that was like my first like introduction to coaching, I would say. And that like, it was love at first sight for sure. Like that first day I was like, this is, I feel like you kind of just know, you know, when you know the partner, when you know the place, like your house, when you know, you just, it's a feeling, you know,
right.
When you know, you know,
when you know, you know. So when was like, what was the day that you were like, okay, I really need to focus on my own business? Like, because there's, you know, there's that lead up to point where you're kind of, you know, exploring, I guess you could say, of what you might want to do. And then there's that point where it's like, okay, I got to burn down all the bridges and just do my own thing.
Another question I've never shared before on a podcast. Good questions. So I think for a long time, and I hear this from people all the time that are just starting out in whatever they're doing, they say, but I love my job. Like, I don't want to leave my job. I just want to do this on the side. This is just like a hobby that I have. And I used to say that. I'm like, oh, like coaching is like drugs. Like, it just makes you feel like the best thing I've ever felt in my life. Like, that is amazing. I have to do that again. And I never really thought that I would do it as a business necessarily, because I was making over six figures in my 9-to-5 job. So it wasn't like a money thing. It was like, oh, I love doing this. And I think that as like things deteriorated at my job, the more I was helping people outside of my job, the more I realized that I was wasting time I could be helping people in that job. So I was like, oh my gosh, I do this in 8 hours a week. Like, if I had 8 hours a day, how many more people could I be helping? But I think it was like, I had this like, you know, a little bit of a, I want to say, disagreement with my boss at the time. And I was like, oh, like, could I get fired about this? Like, is this going to impact like my job? And I remember thinking, you know what? I need to take my business way more seriously. Like, this is not just a joke anymore. Like, I want to see if I could do this for full time. And that's when I like started to think about it differently of like, how could I start charging people for this service? Or could I charge more? What would it look like? What do I want it to look like? And I think I tried to do it on my own for a pretty long time. Like, I'd say probably 8 months of me like trying to figure it out on my own. And I think like, you know, I see this all the time where we're like piecing together information we find online. Like, oh, you should do a webinar, or oh, you should be building your list, or oh, you should have a lead magnet, or oh, you should be doing Facebook and Instagram ads, or oh, you should be like all these different things you should be doing. And so you're just like trying them and like trying to put it, piece it all together. And I mean, I was pretty good at researching. So I thought like, oh, I could definitely figure this out. Like, I'm not going to need someone to help me. How freaking wrong I was. After wasting a lot of time, a lot of money doing things like that I didn't know how to do, that weren't working. And I didn't know why they weren't working because I didn't really know what I was doing.
Right. Oh yeah. Yeah.
And like, it just all didn't connect. I find a lot is like when you're trying to do it on your own, like the things that you're creating are not connected and don't lead to the next stage.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's one of the biggest things that I've learned, with, being part of the, what's called Amplify here in Indy. And, I mean, being part of a community and being part of a, you know, people that are helping each other, and, or, you know, just having a team available to you to help you with things is totally, totally a game changer for sure.
Totally. And so I think that that was where like, I tried it on my own for a while. And if I was really serious about taking it seriously, then I realized that I needed to get some help. And I think at the time, because I was going to therapy, one of the things I was working on was asking for help. I mean, I never, like, even to this day, I don't really love asking for help. It's like more of a thing, a habit that I'm trying to create of asking for help. But at the time I was so uncomfortable. It was like, you failed that you need help. But I was practicing asking for help. And so I thought, you know what? Maybe this is a good place for me to ask for help. And I hired my, and like also I had a coach at the time, but I think that I worked with a marketing coach for a couple of weeks or months. And I was like, oh, this was so helpful. She knows so much more than I do. I didn't know about any of these things. And that was also like the straw that broke the camel's back. Like I was asking for help. I was like, whoa, there's so many things I don't know. And like this person helped me in such a short amount of time. And so I hired like a business coach, like an online business mm-hmm. coach to help me build my business online. Mm. And that was like the thing that got me here. I mean, I wouldn't be here without it.
Right. Oh, just giving you structures that, you know, everything that they've seen and, you know, upon who knows where they learned from. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it just, it becomes ever more processed and filtered and easier to follow as it goes through people, mm-hmm. you know, as opposed to trying to organically derive it all yourself, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Oh, totally. And I think that, like, why wouldn't we ask from someone who's been there or who's someone who's done what we've wanted to do? Like, that's what we look at, like, athletic coaches mm-hmm. for. One of the stories that always reminds me to ask for help is, like, no athlete ever got to the top without a coach.
Right.
There's not a single Olympic athlete that doesn't have a coach.
Yeah. Yeah. And one of the sayings that I hear or used to hear all the time is, what would you rather do? Follow someone through a minefield that knows where the mines are, or go through yourself?
I've never heard that. That's amazing. That is so true. I'm going to use that today. That I've never heard that before. So thank you. Like, did you ask for help when you were building your business?
Not at the beginning. No. No, I was doing the whole Superman syndrome thing, and just mm-hmm. it's just, yeah, it was like I have a specific way of doing everything, especially kind of to this day with the podcast, and mm-hmm. you know, it's just one of those things that I feel like I have a certain process down, and it's really, yeah, I mean, but everything else, no, I like my marketing and things like that, I've actually kind of gotten help
mm-hmm.
on, so.
Mm-hmm.
Moving forward a little bit, you know, one of the things that John Maxwell, I'm a huge John Maxwell fan. He wrote a book called Everyone Communicates and Few Connect. And in a recent talk with Mullet Jones, she said that being relatable is a big component of being more connected, and in telling personal stories is a great way to build that relatability.
Mm-hmm.
What are some other ways that you think that thought leaders can connect better with their audience?
So because I built my business based on connection and not really focusing, I guess one, I would say not focusing on the group as a whole,
mm-hmm.
because when people are consuming your content, they're not doing it mostly with a group. They're probably consuming it on their own. And so speaking to that person and being very specific. So one of the things I for sure did at the beginning, I think I wrote an article that thank goodness I never posted. But like a blog post that I never posted, thank goodness now. But I was like I didn't want to choose a niche because I was like, I like variety. I want to work with all types of different people.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that when you speak to everybody, you actually speak to no mm-hmm. one. And so no one feels connected to you because you're not talking about specific situations. So everyone can say, oh, she's not talking to me.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's not about me. Oh, that is not what I'm going through. And so when speaking to other people or like to your dream client, I would say speak to the specifics of what they're going through. And if you went through it, like what's personal is universal. As much as we want to think that we're all super unique and our lives are super unique, there's somebody out there that has been through something similar, maybe not the exact same situation, but they've felt the same things because like our feelings are the same. Like we all know what mad feels like. It might feel different to each of us, but we have an understanding of what feeling mad is mm-hmm. like, or like feeling sad. And so if you speak about your feelings when you share your story, people are going to connect to those feelings because people as humans, as animals, we want to like not feel alone.
Mm.
We don't survive if we do it alone. So if we are animals that can't survive on our own, we're looking for like, oh, this person is like me.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're like me, then maybe they can help me.
Right.
If they've been through what I've been through, then they can help me. And so people are going to connect with your story because they're going to try to look for ways that you guys are the same and that your story is like their story. It will also inspire them to that they can go from where they are to where you are.
Mm-hmm.
So sharing, I have a, I just am a big believer in sharing the unfiltered stuff. I think that social media has really helped us, and things like professional photos have really helped us to show up as like the highlight reel, the like primped and wearing makeup. Like most days I don't wear makeup. Right. Most days I don't wear a bra. Like, you know, I don't look like that all the time. I don't curl my hair every day. Like I have pin straight hair, you know? So, but like, if we don't show those things, then people think that their journey is like different, or that that's an indication that they're not going to be able to move forward, or that they're not going to be able to achieve that. And the thing is, it's not, it's just that people aren't sharing those things.
Luckily, however, you know, I think I've seen a trend of, you know, social media becoming less about marketing and being perfect, mm-hmm. and going back to being more social and place where you can find your friends. And in fact, earlier mm-hmm. this year, you know, Facebook had a ad campaign that talked about them actually making this change. I don't know if you saw that or not, but I saw it numerous times through different, it was on TV, it was coming through my ads on different websites, all different kinds of places. And knowing this, I mean, how do you see entrepreneurs now using social media to get their brand noticed more?
I mean, I can tell you my favorite way, even though it's like not my favorite way, but it is my favorite way. Confusing as it may be.
Well, I mean, do you see recognized names or brands that, you know, really come to mind more, or?
So I'll be fully honest. I don't really like scroll through social media. I don't really follow a lot of people. I find that it puts me in like the comparison syndrome where I'm like, oh no, like I don't have that, or I'm not doing that, or I don't look like that, or my videos are not like that, or like my content doesn't look like that, or I don't put it out like that. I just like, not a good place to be. Like, I don't have time for that. So like, I always say, ain't nobody got time for that. Ain't nobody got time. You know that YouTube video?
Yeah.
Ain't nobody got time for, like, you know, I don't have even a minute to feel insecure about myself and like that what I'm doing is not enough, mm-hmm. or that I'm not enough. Another Brené Brown thing, that like, I am enough, and like, I'm enough, and I am who I am for the people that are looking for me and not someone else. I had a client, one of my one-on-one clients, who came to me and she said, I've been looking for a business coach for 4 years that she liked and wanted to hire. So I was like, whoa, you know, like there are people out there that like don't connect with the people online. And I mean, to be honest, like I didn't connect with any business coaches when I first started mm-hmm. out either. Mm-hmm. Cause I'm like, oh, I'm not like that. And like, so being yourself and not being like super polished all the time is going to connect with people who are not at that stage and don't feel like that's for them. So I think like learning that, I was like, I don't need to look too hard at what other people are doing, because I mean, it just doesn't do good things for my business or for like my potential clients or my current clients. So, I mean, I can see like what's working for like my business or like my clients' businesses. But I don't really follow that many people.
Well, you know, and for me, when I was going through that early stages of, you know, not only building the podcast and learning all the you know, what techie. All the techie stuff behind it, right? Mm-hmm. And becoming an audiophile and everything that goes along with that, you know, my way of getting and connecting with people to get on the show was actually through Facebook. And still, you know, I still mm-hmm. enjoy doing that. But as mm-hmm. my friends list has gotten bigger and bigger, I don't know mm-hmm. how close I am to 3,000 at this point. But, you know, people find you. And as we were talking about, people add you and you mm-hmm. have no idea who people are, but you don't know. It's like, am I friendly? And click yes. Or, you know, who do we have in common mm-hmm. that I can say, okay, they're cool because they have these mutual friends or whatever. You know, the more I've done that, the less my personal feed feels mm-hmm. personal to me. And mm-hmm. it's just one of those things. I'm just like scrolling, like, I don't know this person. I don't know that person. I don't mm-hmm. know this person. And it's just, I know that Facebook doesn't have that designed, you know, in mind, but mm-hmm. that's what's happened to me. And like you, mm-hmm. I don't see myself scrolling through Facebook as much as I once did. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. See, I definitely totally agree with you about that. Like, one, my Facebook is all business, like not really any personal. I'm sure like people can find me that are personal, like my family and my friends, but I mostly use it for business. I didn't really use Facebook a lot before I started my business. So for me, like even just using Facebook was a big change. Mm-hmm. I was more into Instagram, and I definitely have found that with Instagram that like the more people you follow, the more followers you have, it tends to be not so much of your friends. I mean, at least they do allow you to like, you know, put a notification for when somebody you want to follow is posting. Right. But yeah, I also think like, I don't really scroll that much either anymore. You know, we don't have time to scroll, you know, but I do think that I like the way that it allows people to connect with you. Like I've met so many people through Facebook or Instagram that like I would never have connected with, never known, never worked with, never spoken to. Mm-hmm. Like there are just like so many people, and also like people that I do admire. Like sometimes I will like send out a message or like comment on one of their Instagram stories or something. And you know, it's pretty cool that, I mean, I don't know if it's them who replies, but like that somebody will reply. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, one of the things that, you know, our mutual friend, Jessica Rhodes, she, mm-hmm. you know, what was interesting about her story was that all these people that she was meeting online, she then later, you know, met in conferences, and that became her mm-hmm. business, is that she had actually met all these people way before it was commonplace for people to accept random friend requests on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And, you know, mm-hmm. it's so commonplace now. It's like, you know, and it's just, as you said, it's just there's just so much content that you just can't deal with. And some of it might be good, but at the same time, it's just like,
ain't nobody got time
for that, you know?
Yeah. Ain't nobody got time for that. I just say that all the time now. I hope it's not copywritten. I don't think it is. It was a news report, so it can't be. but yeah, like I also I have clients, so I try my best to follow like what they're doing and comment and post and things on like all of their feeds on like Facebook and Instagram. So, you know, I do. There are some people that I follow. There are some people that I've like legit like followed for a long time that like a year later become my client. Mm. And like there are people that I would never in a million years have thought like would hire me. Like, you know, you have that imposter syndrome. Like me, you would hire me. You want me to be your coach? Like, that's so cool. I've been following you for so long. But yeah, like I think that's important, just to like look for the people that do resonate with you and building those relationships with them. And even just being curious, one of the things that has really done well for me, especially in the early stages, is like being curious. I find a lot of people send you a message and like they're just trying to sell something to you.
Yeah, LinkedIn especially.
Oh my goodness, LinkedIn. I don't even know the last time I was on LinkedIn, because I'm like, how many of these messages and friend requests and things like that do I have? Like, oi. Mm-hmm. but they're just, they just assume so many things about mm-hmm. you. And I'm like, I don't need this. Like, you have no idea like what you're talking about. So I'm like, it just puts me off, and it's like so icky. And I'm like, if you want to connect with somebody and you want to send them a random message, like at least be curious about them. At least like do your research about them. At least like ask something that's going to start a conversation, rather than just like going into, oh, I'm selling this thing, or oh, I'm running this promo, or oh, you should do this. Or I get so many messages on Instagram of people who are like, oh, I'd love to be a guest on your podcast. Uh-huh.
And?
What would you like to talk about? Right? Like, don't just send me a request. It's like, oh, I think I'd be a great guest on your podcast. Uh-huh. What are you going to talk about? Like, what are you going to offer my audience? Like, tell me give me some sort of like, you know, sell it to me a little bit if you want to be a guest on my podcast, you know? So that's the thing. I'm like, yeah, like kind of like think about, I like to think about if this person was like a brand new person that you met at a party, how would you act with a person you didn't know that you just started talking to at a party and then go from there. Right? Like no one's going to do that. Oh, I just saw you in the corner and I'm like, yo, you should definitely buy my stuff. You definitely need this. Like, you know what? I offer this service. I have this agency and like, you definitely need this. I don't think so, buddy. Like you don't even know me. You haven't even asked anything about me. So no, that's like crazy. I can't believe that works. Like maybe it works because people do it so often, but I can't imagine that works very
well. And that kind of brings up to another point, like, you know, sales funnels, because of all the changes that are going on. You know, know, mm-hmm. how being social media is being used and all the different mannerisms. And then again, Facebook's not making it any easier because they're changing mm-hmm. the metrics that are being used mm-hmm. in the ad manager. Like, for example, one, mm-hmm. you know, when I was doing ads in 2017 for people, one of the things that I was, you know, basing those ads on was their actual position in a company. And you can't do that anymore. Mm-hmm. And it's like, mm-hmm. ah, that was so powerful and so useful. So, I mean, what are your current thoughts on sales funnels? I mean, like, for example, I was just scrolling through Facebook right before we got on here. It was a sponsored ad by Pat Flynn, and it mm-hmm. disappeared before I could actually click on it. I'm like, Facebook, what are you doing?
Whoa, that's so weird. How come it disappeared? It had like a time.
I don't know what it was. It just, I was just scrolling down and it's done this for my account several times. And I've talked to other people that they'll see a sponsored ad and then all of a sudden, boom, it's gone.
It's gone.
Yeah.
Ooh, I would want to know about that. And like in a good and bad way, because like, you know, give people a little bit more time. I would say, firstly, like this is like, nobody ever asks me things like this because I'm like, oh, I'm such a nerd about Facebook ads and sales funnels. I love chatting about that stuff. So one, I think that the key that I use with Facebook ads is providing value first. Like one of the things I talked with my clients about when using Facebook or Instagram ads, when I say Facebook ads, I mean both of them, is that you're not convincing people mm-hmm. that they need your services, right. that they need this product of yours. You're not convincing them. You are only offering it to people who are already looking for the thing that you offer. We're putting their ads in front of people that are literally searching, talking, watching things that are telling us they want what you have to offer. So I think it's like not really creating like, how can I create an ad that like convinces someone they need my services? No, I only use it to like provide value, get you in front of people that would otherwise not know about you. And to give them something that is going to solve their problem. Mm. If you just give them something that's going to solve their problem, they're just going to want more. Right. Give them a taste and they're going to want a meal.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's just, you know, a lot of people, it's like, you know, just different services and things like that. I mean, that's the whole reason why they have those 30-day limited trials. You know, it's like, mm-hmm. you know, it's like, put this into your life, see how you like it, and then buy. Mm-hmm. But you know, I do see a lot of salesy ads still, and you know, it's like mm-hmm. as we were just already talking about, buy my stuff, register now for the event. I mean, how can mm-hmm. you know someone that's still doing that? What would you change in their mind to be like, that doesn't work, stop it?
I mean, I think they would have to learn that lesson the hard way by being like, well, what if you could be making money by only showing your ads and like only paying for ads that are going to people that want what you have to offer, but you're not, like even with a sales page, you're not talking to people about all the things that they're going to get that they don't care about because they don't know that they need those mm-hmm. things. You want to meet them where they're at. So thinking about like how do they describe their problem? How do they describe the solution that they're looking for? What did you wish was available when you first started that wasn't? How can you create something or provide something that is not otherwise available that is going to solve someone's problem and quickly? How can you give them a quick win? What is the mindset shift that they need to have in order for them to say yes to this thing? Because if they don't believe that they can get help or that they need help or that this thing that you're offering is the solution, then they're not going to be interested. And you can't, no matter what you say to them, it's not going to work. Like you can't sell something to people that people don't want. I always describe the stupid thing that happened with me. Like I don't like curtains. I know that's weird. I just don't like curtains. I've never liked them. And
curtains as in like windows. Like in your house. Okay.
Yeah. In your house. I never bought curtains in my life. I never understood why you needed them. I'm like, don't people want the sun to come into their house? Until I had to tape a video, many videos at a specific time where the sun in my house was coming in like all on me and I couldn't move into a different area because all the walls are glass. So I had no choice. I'm like, this is so annoying. Like I can't tape any videos at this time. Like, I'm going to have to change the time that I'm doing this for my business, all because the freaking sun is coming into my place at the wrong time.
Yep.
And I mean, at that point, I needed curtains. So you could have sold me the most beautiful curtains on the planet before. Before, I wouldn't even have listened. I would have tuned out. Mm. But when I actually did need it, I was like, oh my gosh, I don't even care what it looks like. I just need something to block out the light and fast. Right. So I don't think that you can convince somebody that they need something that they don't want. So give them something they want. What are they going to get? It's not about you. It's not about what you want to give them. It's not about, I want you to. It's you'll get, like, you will get this. This will change for you. Just talking to them about what they get rather than like, oh, I think that you should sign up for this. It's going to be amazing.
There was a quote that I once heard, but it was essentially just talking about it's value first, over give, mm-hmm. and, you know.
Yeah, and under promise and over deliver.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, for sure, for sure. So another thing that you actually do, I'm sure, as a coach, mm-hmm. is mm-hmm. you do a lot of mindset work. And, you know, mm-hmm. there's five aspects of personal development. Spiritual, emotional, mental, physical, and social. And mm-hmm. when I was a coach, you know, I really enjoyed helping people with the mental work, I guess because I live in my head all the time and did so growing up because I'm an only child. Mainly what I found, though, is that a lot of people have a lot of self-limiting beliefs. Mm. And I'm wondering, as another coach, what are some of the things that you enjoy helping people with?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I definitely love to help people like see themselves in a different light, see themselves the way that other people see themselves. Anyone who hangs out with me knows that I hate when people like start like yelling at themselves, basically, because I'm like, don't talk to my friend like that. Like, you wouldn't talk to me like that. Why are you talking to yourself like that? So like limiting yourself, like you would never limit someone else by saying like, you can't do that. I mean, if maybe you would, but like, I don't want to hang out with you if that's the kind of friend you're going to be. You know, you can't do that. Like, you know, we make our own limitations. So like really pulling back the curtain. I just said pulling back the curtain that like they are the only ones that are deciding what they can and can't do. And the minute you decide that you can do it, it's amazing that you can. For example, like I know people do like some magic tricks, you know, where they like make you feel like you're can't lift your arm or something like mm-hmm. that. And it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy. We create those limitations. So I love helping people really, I guess, unpack them and break them down and show the evidence that those are wrong. Right. And creating new stories, new storylines, new dreams, and actually achieving them, like taking the action. Because if we don't believe that we can achieve them, we're certainly not going to do the things that we're required to do in order to achieve
them. Right.
I wouldn't be taking the action. I wouldn't have hired a coach if I didn't feel like that could help me and that I could actually have a business and work in it full time.
Right. Interesting enough, another one that comes up all the time, and I actually saw you posting about this on your page, and I saw someone else talking about it just right before we got on there, is people undervaluing themselves. Like, oh, I mean, gosh, it's just like one girl was talking about how she does all these things for her clients, but yet she mm-hmm. knows someone that, you know, does the same things, if mm-hmm. not less, but has their clients pay three times as much.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I say this to people all the time. All the time, because I'm like, what is the difference? You know what the difference is? The difference is that you decided you couldn't charge that. You decided that nobody would pay that, only you, because somebody else over there is like, this is worth so much more. So when I work with clients around pricing and raising their prices, most of my clients know the minute that they start working with me, they're going to raise their prices, whether they like it or not. Because most people, I would say 99% of people are undercharging. And it's because we are like, oh, like who's going to pay that? is it worth that? Am I worth that? And it's like about my worth instead of the results that you help that person achieve. What are the results worth? What is this change worth to them? So looking less, I also had a problem with this when I first started. So that's also how I wrapped my head around charging more was it's not about me and me making money. It's not about me. It's about what is going to happen if they pay more. One of the best lessons I learned was when people pay more, they get better results. So the lower your prices are, you're attracting people at that stage and they're not going to get as good results because they're not investing as much. Even when they don't have the money, which is a lot of the people I work with don't have the money. Nobody has the money, to be honest, when you first start out to hire a coach, but it's still a necessary thing. It's like we don't have the money to pay in full for university or college, but yet people do it every day. So I think that that's also a mindset shift about like paying for support when we pay so much to go to school and yet we wouldn't invest that in our own business, but, or in help for our business. But I think that when you raise your prices, you see that your clients get better results. You show up differently. They show up differently. And then when you have more to give.
Right.
So if you raise your prices and you decide to charge more and that it's worth more, and you can demonstrate that with like the results that you're helping people achieve, like even so something so easy as health. Like if you live in the US and you pay for your healthcare, it's pretty easy to see like what are the cost to value proposition for that. Like what could this potential problem cost you over the long term? Or even I had a client once that helped people like dating and relationship. I was like, well, what is finding your like dream partner or your soulmate worth to you? Most people can't put a price on that. So if you help someone find the father, like the man that's going to be the father of their children, or the wife that they're going to build a business with, or like whatever it is, like whatever is important to them, if you can help that person do that, I'm sure that it's going to be worth way more than what you're charging. So looking at the results that you help people achieve and what is that worth to them?
Right. Yeah. And you know, it's true. I mean, and the other thing is the higher you pay for something, the more you're going to actually pay attention to it. You know,
When you pay attention.
Exactly. Exactly. Something else that people struggle with, and myself included, is journaling. And, you know, I actually see the benefit that it gives people, especially writing down things that you appreciate in life. So, you know, you don't really get too down on themselves for everything that's going bad. Or, you know, maybe just jotting down ideas and concepts that, you know, people are thinking about maybe during church or somewhere where it's not appropriate to start talking about said idea. And they'll just open up their book, jot it down, and put it away. One of my co-hosts, Harrison, says that the way that he actually uses social media is like a journal. You know, he documents what he's doing regularly and, you know, just throws up pictures like that. And, you know I should be documenting more. And the more I think about how he does it, the more it makes sense to me. But a lot of times it just kind of feels repetitive and boring. And you know, especially when I'm doing the same thing week in and week out. Do you have any tips for people that might be struggling with journaling?
I think that for me, I first started out by really focusing on a journal that like I could do. So like the 5-minute journal was like the easiest journal. It like is so simple to do, fast, and it gets you into the habit of writing things down.
Which is on Android and iTunes now, by the way.
Just so. Oh, yeah, wow. Yeah. Really? I didn't know that. I have the like printed version. Yep. Okay. That's amazing. So I think that the reason that has caught on so much with people is because it's so fast to do. And it really starts your day off well, and it puts you in the mindset for like being positive and grateful and noticing the little things that are happening that we tend to skip over to focus on the bad things. And so I think that's like a really easy way to begin. Another one when I was like not sure what I was going to be doing with my life is called Live in Wonder, I think. The journal is called Live in Wonder. And it just asks you some like really interesting questions. So I think I was like, I don't do well with just like, I'm just writing with a blank page. Blank pages don't do it for me. So I need like a question, like ask me a question and I will answer it. So I think it just like, and whatever, the same way in coaching, no matter the question you ask, like the person's going to take it in the direction that they need to take it for that day. So, and I also notice that the questions that are coming up, whether they're in that journal or a different journal or a question I'm asking myself or writing about, is that when you ask those questions, like you are taking that as a message of like, that's the place that you need to go today. You know, like noticing like, what are you connecting with in that moment? What is coming up for you? What's happening in your life? What are people saying around you? And taking that as a message from the universe of like a direction of like, this is what I'm meant to share. This is what I'm meant to discover today. This is what I'm meant to find out about myself or dig deeper into.
Interesting. Interesting. Something that Veronica and I have spoken about, and she's, you know, she's a coach, is the business side of coaching clients.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to invoicing, for example, how do you make clients pay up without sounding like a pain? And how do you keep the good ones long-term? Two questions there for you.
Mm-hmm. So I would say the first one, like nobody likes following up with failed payments. Nobody enjoys that. I think it's like a necessary evil. And I think that really having a policy about it has helped me. I was working with a company that does that for you, and they were the ones that like asked me those tough questions. Like, okay, so what happens if someone's payment fails after a month? Like putting that in your contract, and like, what happens if, you know, if they, I mean, you can hire it out firstly, if you don't want to do it. I mean, it costs a lot of money to hire it out. So, but if you have a lot of them, like looking at like, yeah, who are you attracting? How are they getting in? Like what are the payment, terms? Also, I like to give a extra charge for people that take payment plans, because it is a liability on you. Like they're going to get all of your content if you are providing a course or a program or something. And if they are getting access to that, like there has to be a premium paid for offering a payment plan. But for the ones that you have to follow up with, like it's not fun for anybody. I would just put it on a schedule, a follow-up schedule, and having like an actual drawn up and very open discussion about what happens. Like, are they going to lose access? Like how long is too long? Cause then it becomes more like systematic rather than like, oh, maybe I should make this exception for this person. And oh, I'm going to make this exception for this person. And then you find yourself not being able to pay.
Well, and that makes a perfect good point, is that maybe, you know, if coaches find that they have issues, you know, seeking said back payments, maybe they should consider making a membership site that becomes somewhat of a wall that kind of does the talking for you. And it's like, if they're not paying up, then, you know, cut up their service and until they do.
Cut off.
No?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in terms of how do I keep clients for the long term, I would say that I don't want my clients to actually stay with me too long. Hmm. Do I love them and I don't want to see them leave? Of course. But I've benefited from having different coaches at different stages of my business. And I would, one, want that for them. Two, I don't want to create, I'm creating leaders. Like I should be coaching myself out of my position. Like not that you never need a coach, but like that they don't need a coach that does what I do or what I help them with. Obviously, as I grow, I have more to give as well. And I always have a coach, because I always say never hire a coach that doesn't have a coach.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's just strange. And so I'm always growing and I'm always learning. But like even I know one of my coaches, we parted ways because her business was going in one direction and that wasn't the direction I wanted to go with my business. So I was like, you know, like maybe it's time for me to like consider working with someone else. And is it scary? Because, you know, I always think the devil you know versus the devil you don't. That person knows me. They've been through this stuff with me. They understand my habits. But it is to my benefit when you take that leap. Again, it's always scary. Anything you do in your business is going to be new and scary. And, you know, making those decisions is something you have to do regularly as an entrepreneur. So putting myself out there and actually making those changes was important for my development.
Nice. Cool.
So I think that as much as I love my clients and I don't want to see them go, I know that I also want them to progress and I want them to work with other people too. And I want them to, you know, get what they need from our coaching and then also grow to a point where they need something different.
And don't be selfish, basically.
Yeah, basically, like, you don't want them to keep, like, I don't want them to feel like they're dependent on me. I do not want to create some sort of dependency where they feel like they can't live or run their business without me. Like, that doesn't feel good for me. Like, that's not my job. My job is to help them make money. My job is to help them be a better leader. My job is to help them develop into a boss.
Nice. So if people are really liking what they're hearing today and want to start this process with you and about making you into their coach, what does the beginning of that process look like? How can I get started?
So I would say, one, you can always shoot me an email or you can sign up for a call. Like, I usually do like a business strategy call with people. I also have like a clarity call if they're just like unsure of which program is for them. But in a business strategy call, we would go through like, what do they see themselves doing? Am I the right fit? Like, what do I offer? They can ask me questions. I mostly ask them questions about like what they're looking for, like what kind of person they are, because, you know, I only work with go-getters. I only work with people who are willing to put themselves out there, even when they're scared, do the things that scare them. I bleeped myself. but like, that's what I do, right? Is you're going to feel uncomfortable, but it's also going to be in service of your business and the people out there that need your help. So I kind of feel that out and I ask some questions for myself as well to make sure that they're the right fit. And then we would go from there, like deciding like which one of my programs would be best for them.
Cool.
So you can, again, all of that's available on my website at www.wholeheartedbusinesscoach.com. And also you can hear more of the stuff that I'm doing or the things that I'm teaching with my clients and like are in the How We Hustle podcast, which is also available anywhere you listen to podcasts.
Which of all course will be in the show notes as well. So what are some things that you're looking forward to in the not too distant future? I mean, we're already, man, August, September of 18. You want to talk about another year that blew right by. But what, yeah, what's got you excited in the rest of this year or early next year?
So I would say that I will be launching a course of like, it's going to be like a 90-day course, which is for program launches, because I find that some people need more support during a program launch. And for anyone who's been through a program launch, it isn't always a walk in the park. And so I think that even for my current clients, like getting an additional support there, whether it's techie or coaching or mindset, or even just like the support of going through the ups and downs of program launching plus structuring it, et cetera, so that it makes money. So I'm going to be launching that and it starts in November. And so that's like really exciting. I can't wait to support a bunch of people that are going to be doing a program launch. And I feel like it's kind of like launch season, you know, the end of the year, I feel like people are prepping for launches. And so that's amazing. And I'm hoping, praying, not taking action too, but I'm going to, like we've had my membership site done for like almost over a year. I just haven't had the space to really launch it the way that I want to. And so probably after that program launch, I will be launching the membership site, because like that needs to be like, that's the thing I want to focus on for 2019.
Right. That's awesome.
It's been so I'm really excited to do that, because it's been something I've been talking about and we created a long time ago. So,
getting into the rapid fire questions real quick. Since you're a fellow podcaster, what are your three favorite influential podcasts? What podcasts help you kind of form who you are as a host?
Okay, good question. I would say for sure Amy Porterfield. She's probably the one I listen to the most, especially when I was like commuting to work and back. Like I listened over and over and over again. So I love her podcast. I also like Rick Mulready. His is, I don't even know what it's called, to be honest. The Art of Paid Traffic, okay. I think. But he's the person who I learned a lot about Facebook ads from. As soon as I had done my first successful Facebook ad and I was like, whoa, how did that work? I don't even know. I need to know more about this, because I just made money from spending so little. And I really follow a lot of the content. He breaks it down, gives guides, like he's very transparent with his content. So I love that. And then I would say, who is the other person I would listen to the most? I mean, I really listen to The Daily a lot. Like I listen to like a lot of like news on podcasting too. But I think for business, I would say Being Boss podcast. I really like that one too. I would say I like that there was like two hosts there. So because we had two hosts on our podcast, so it's sometimes nice to see what it's like when they're doing it with two people, especially if they bring on a guest. Right.
Well, so. and I was the last guest that we had on the show, Millette. She hadn't been on a podcast with two hosts before, and it was interesting. But yeah, sometimes you can't get the co-hosts to make it. I know that Veronica's doing a speech today, and Harrison's out and about doing stuff here in Indy. So, yep.
See, we just do our guest experts as like in like one person, because like that's the same thing. It's like there's two people that are hosting, and then it gets all jumbled. So I don't mind it.
Next one. In the last 5 years, what new belief, behavior, or habit has improved your life?
One, there's so many. I think that I would say the biggest one is that being vulnerable makes people feel more connected to you and helps you connect with other people. I don't think I ever would have shared like disastrous stories or things that had happened in my life, especially publicly, if I hadn't heard that. And like that we are enough. We don't have to be anybody else. We don't have to like achieve everything to just be enough. The way that you are.
Well, you're bringing that up. I actually just put a post on that. It was like a week or so ago, and you know, it is about putting your failures out there, because if you don't, like we've been talking about in the podcast already, you know, you look like this perfect person, and no one's going to be able to be like, well, I can see myself walking their shoes, right? You know,
exactly. Like if you look perfect online, people are like. I always use this like celebrities, like we don't think that they're like us, even though they are, but we think like, oh, your life's so different. Like yours different. Like you don't get me. You don't get my life. And really like, that's why they put in those gossip magazines. Like they're just like us because like, that's exactly what they're trying to do there is like, you know, humanize them and make you see that they're just like you. But so if you're going out there and pretending that like, you're like some perfect person and nothing ever goes wrong in your life, no one is going to feel connected to you.
Yeah, for sure. What do most people not realize is a huge waste of money?
Oh my gosh. Oh, so many things. I would say one, maybe professional photo shoots at the beginning. Websites. No, I take it back. Websites.
Websites.
Websites, websites, websites. Without a doubt, I literally have clients that like don't even have a website and are making over six figures. Like you don't need a website to make money. And everyone puts their time, money, and energy into building a website. And guess what? No one knows about you. So no one is searching for you and no one is going to find your website. So like I would not put money into a website until you're like, even Amy Porterfield said like maybe last year when she redid her website, that she never used her website either and she doesn't make money from her website. Like I'd put my money into like sales pages and ads and things like that before I ever built a website.
In defense though, it helps to have somewhere to send people to. If you,
opt-in, somewhere where you're going to like collect their information and be able to actually use it to contact them.
And if you put it in your website, then you'll have it forever. Unlike if you put it into ClickFunnels.
Oh yeah, I use ClickFunnels.
You can put it in ClickFunnels, but again, it's you own the site and you're renting a platform with ClickFunnels. So I mean, it's personal for preference. Sure. If you're doing a maybe something for a client, so to speak, like in what I was doing last year, then of course I'd use ClickFunnels because I don't want to screw around with their WordPress install, their Squarespace website, whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, it's so much easier just to have a one-stop solution for sure.
I just think like people that are starting out, they think that like the website is the most important thing for them to do. And they just end up spending so much money and mm-hmm. time building a website that in the end, they're just going to have to scrap or rewrite the entire thing anyways, because right. they don't even know who they're speaking to when they wrote that website.
What is something you believed as a 25-year-old that you now tell yourself is completely inaccurate, and why?
I would say that I was never going to be an entrepreneur. Like back when I was 25, I didn't think that, I was like, I couldn't own a business. I thought that people that owned businesses were like Mark Cuban and like people that were like, had lots of money or came from lots of money or made lots of money, like Warren Buffett. Like I was like, I'm not a genius like that. Like, I don't know how to do that. And I think that what I realized is like business owners are like all types of people. Anybody that wants to and gets some support can be a successful business owner. And also like success is what you decide it is. It isn't what someone else says. It's not like making $10 million all of a sudden, or like, you know, or having a $100 million company. Like, do you want to run a $100 million company? Do you know what's involved in running a $100 million company? Like, would you be perfectly happy and feel even more successful if you were running like a $500,000 mm-hmm. company?
Or one that you were making $250,000 on per year and you were just basically, you know, living a passive lifestyle. I mean,
oh, totally. Because like you can easily do that. Like it's not that, I mean, it takes time to build and tweak and stuff, but like you can pretty much work not at all and make like 250, even 500,000. I mean, it takes time. It doesn't happen overnight. You're going to have to like go through a lot of iterations before it gets to that. But I do think like if that's what you want your life to look like, then that's what you should be doing. Like for me, that just isn't, I didn't want my life to look like that or my business to look like that. So for me, like I love working with actual real people. So, you know, building it based on what you enjoy doing and like what you want your life to look like, rather than like, oh, I'm not like some like angel investor. Like you don't have to be a successful business owner.
Final question. How can someone be a difference maker in their community?
I mean, I always go to like the personal. So I would say like, how can you change one person's life? Because if you change one person's life, you can likely change other people's lives, and you can help one person. If you help one person, like even when you smile or do something nice or do some sort of random act of kindness, like that changes that person's energy for the day. It doesn't have to be something huge. Like you can buy the person behind you in a drive-through line their meal or their coffee or something. You know, like you don't, it doesn't have to be something grand and huge. It can be something very small that actually changes how they feel about their day, changes how they interact with other people that day. And then it's just like, I think it snowballs. Like when you pay somebody some kindness, they're much more likely to pay it forward.
Love it.
So I would focus on helping one person. Like, how can you change one person's day? What are you great at? What do people compliment you for? What comes easily to you? Because it doesn't come easily to everybody.
Cool. Well, Tanya, thanks so much for spending some time with me today. Again, you can be found on wholeheartedbusinesscoach.com. What are your socials?
It's Wholehearted Business Coach for everything. Facebook, Instagram, I'm pretty sure everything. Just Wholehearted Business Coach.
Well, again, thank you so much for being on, and it was fun.
Thank you for having me. This was awesome.
So there you guys have it. I hope you enjoyed our chat and hope it gave you a little bit of extra value today. I was actually surprised that people hadn't asked her how she got into coaching in the first place on other various podcasts. And personally, you know, when I'm listening to the folks that I go for information, I want to know about how they came by the information that they have and that they use in their own business. And so I'm glad that we were really able to capture some of those questions that apparently she hadn't been asked before. If you enjoyed the conversation and want to take it to the next level, I have a few of her videos in the show notes, which you can find at newinceptions.com/131. She has a ton of great topics on her YouTube channel, so I'll be sure to include some videos that were relevant to our chat today, including working smarter and not harder, how to attract high-end clients through sales funnels, and scheduling your day for six-figure success. So that's it for session 131. Thank you for spending a little bit of time with me today and hope you had a good time. The next one is one to look forward to, as we're going to be doing a silver edition with someone that you guys all know, Veronica Guerin. She's finally releasing her book this month, and we wanted to get her feedback on the entire process of creating the book and some of the things that she's learned along the way. Until then, don't forget to get your free .com secrets book if you're looking to start making sales funnels or want to make you the ones that you already have better. Get it for free at newinceptions.com/.com secrets. That being said, thanks for joining Tanya and me today. And until next session, dig in, have fun, and take care in whatever you're creating. And we'll see you back here next time.
Thanks for listening to the Angles of Latitude podcast. Connect with us at home, at work, or on the go at facebook.com/newinceptions, on Twitter at newinceptions, Instagram at new.inceptions, and on the web at newinceptions.com.